The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
And you're waking up with the Bill Myers Show.
11 minutes after 8 on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. We have a special treat this morning. I consider it a special treat. I have read Donald Jeffries off and on for a number of years. I would see articles on lewrockwell.com, various other places. And I'm thinking, boy, you know, this is interesting. Interesting guy. And then Tom from Talent said, hey, Bill, you got to check out his latest book, American Memory Hole. American Memory Hole. And the full title is actually, American Memory Hole, How the Court Historians Promote Disinformation. Now, a little bit more about Donald. Donald's been a JFK assassination researcher. Oh, so you started with that. That's how you cut your teeth. Hey, Donald, welcome to the show. Good to have you on.
For having me on. I started out as a teenage volunteer in the mid-1970s for Mark Lane's group, Citizens Committee of Inquiry. You know, Mark Lane was a most famous and well-known critic of the Warren Report. He was a hero to me, and I based my own civil libertarian philosophy, you know, pretty much on his philosophy.
All right, civil libertarian. You must be very lonely out there, if that's the case, right?
Extremely lonely.
Okay, all right. So you're kind of like the proverbial old-style, old-school Maytag repairman. I'm a civil libertarian. All right.
Yeah.
Now, your first novel, I'm just taking this from your Amazon bio, okay? Your first novel, The Unreals, published in 2007. Your first nonfiction book was Hidden History, an expose of modern crimes, conspiracies, and cover-ups in American politics. And that was released by Skyhorse Publishing. That was about 10 years ago. Skyhorse, that's the same one that did, like, the Anthony Fauci book, too, wasn't it, now that I think about it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. They're the biggest publisher someone like me could get. I mean, writing what I write about. They're a division of Simon & Schuster now, and I used to have a Simon & Schuster page, but they threw that down the memory hole. I think they started looking at what some of us were writing. Simon & Schuster, I don't want to be associated with that.
Oh, listen, you know, we're Simon & Schuster. We are part of the memory holding of America. That's why we're here. Because only the, shall we say, respectable historians get to publish under our imprint. Would that be a fair assessment of what we go with?
Yeah, the court historians. And that's why, you know, I call them the court historians because I refer to them that way in all my writing, because it's a tip of the hat to Professor Harry Elmer Barnes, who was like me, a classical liberal, like many people were back in the day. People like H.L. Mencken and things like that. He made the mistake of questioning World War I afterwards and saying, you know, why do we fight in World War I? That seemed to make any sense. And he was drummed out of polite society. You know, he used to write for all the mainstream left-wing, you know, liberal establishment publications.
Now, this is Mencken you're speaking of, right?
No, this is Harry Elmer Barnes. Mencken managed to hang on.
Oh, okay, all right, because I was wondering if Mencken got himself sideways. You know, my favorite H.L. Mencken quote is the one that I think it's something along the lines that at some point in every man's life, you just have to hoist the black flag and go about slitting
yeah.
throats, you know?
Yeah. I've quoted that in one of my books, and I also refer to his thing about practical politics has become nothing more than a series of endless hobgoblins to alarm the public, and I refer to that often because that's where our entire foreign policy is built around these foreign hobgoblins.
All right. Well, one of the aspects of my life, I think you're a few years older than me, but I have spent most of my adult life recovering from my very limited government education, especially when it comes to the history of America. Now, I know that history is always told by the victors in a process, and I know that as we revise things around, things don't always look as good for the victors as it might otherwise. But what I find out in American Memory Hole is that, especially over the last 20 to 40, maybe 50, 60 years, it's as if everything, when you actually look at the real evidence, everything, every major event in one form or another has had some serious, not just little lies, but huge lies attached to it in the history of the United States. Is that a fair assessment of where you're going with American Memory Hole?
Absolutely. I hope one day to find some significant event that they actually told the truth about. I haven't found it yet, and I think this is, you know, people tell me all the time, you think everything's a conspiracy. Well, yes, I do, because we're being run by conspirators. They fit every definition of that. They conspire against the public interest, and You know, Jonathan Swift, the great writer of Gulliver's Travels, back in the 1700s commented on the judges of his day, and he said, you know, they're so corrupt we can't bribe them to do the right thing. I think that's where we are today. All our leaders, I extend past the corrupt judicial system, I don't think you can bribe the people who are in charge of this to do the right thing. They're so committed to evil and wrongdoing and corruption and cover-ups that they don't know any other way. This is it, conspiring is a way, it's standard operating procedure. It's how they do business.
On American or in American Memory Hole, break down what are the various chapters and what do you touch on so people know what they're going to get, because I'd highly recommend it. I've read about three or four chapters right now. I'm still working through the 9/11 chapter, and we'll talk more about that just a little bit.
Well, it covers a great deal of information, and it's kind of a combination of my earlier – this is basically Hidden History 3, but for some reason Skyros doesn't like the numbers in there. So Hidden History is still my all-time bestseller. That covered basically from the JFK assassination, a lot about that, up through the Obama years, which is when it was published. Crimes and Cover-Ups in American Politics, 1776-1963, which has a foreword by Ron Paul, very honored for that. That's a prequel, and that covers from the beginning of the Republic up to the 1950s. So this one is a combination. We start at the beginning of the Republic, and I go into a lot about judicial review. Thomas Jefferson is one of my all-time heroes, and I talk about how he warned so much against what was happening at the beginning of the Republic, Marbury versus Madison, where the judiciary took on, you know, extended powers and said, you know, we're going to interpret the Constitution. And Jefferson, no, the Congress might as well do that.
Well, yeah, well, Jefferson had warned, and I do remember reading this in other books, that Jefferson had said that, you know, if you were going to allow the Supreme Court to be the sole arbiter of what the Constitution is, it ends up being the despots. The despots then reside in the Supreme Court, right? That's what you're going to get.
Right, and so we see the effects. Of judicial review is very important. I think I'm the first one to really bring this up seriously since Jefferson did. But both the right and the left, they completely fall into this power. So everything, both the right, both the left, they hope to get something into a courtroom and hope they get a judge that's sympathetic to them. It's going to declare it unconstitutional or constitutional, and that's not the way it's supposed to work. And in 1994, a very different California overwhelmingly passed Proposition 187, which would have limited government benefits to those who were here legally, a very common-sense measure.
And imagine what would have happened to California had that been put in place. There would have been fewer incentives.
Yeah, I think it would be a whole different, completely different world out there, but what happened? It went to a federal judge under judicial review, and he just said, no, it's not constitutional. So millions and millions of people had their rights, their power thwarted by that, and that's not a constitutional republic. It's not democracy. It's tyranny. It's oligarchy. It's plutocracy, and that's what I write about all the time. And people, both the left and the right, don't understand. As long as a court rules in their favor, then they're okay with it. And my point is, it's not supposed to be that way. If any of the three branches should have taken on extended powers, it would be the legislative. But unfortunately, because we can at least replace them, you know, every 2 years in the House, and they actually are by far the weakest branch. They haven't declared war since, you know, World War II, and how many wars have we been involved in since then?
And look at what has happened with the regulatory state, the administrative state, which was supposed to be directed by Congress. Congress is supposed to yank the chain of the EPA or of the BLM or the U.S. Forest Service or the IRS. It's supposed to be yanking its chain. But these administrative agencies just run as their own fourth branch, really.
Absolutely. And that, you know, that's why I write a lot about Lincoln in this book. And I have, you know, an unconventional view of Lincoln. I think he was our greatest tyrant. More and more people are coming around to that. But Lincoln set terrible precedents. And the state you're talking about was pretty much created under Lincoln. Lincoln was the first imperial president. He took on expanded powers. So you already had the judiciary with judicial review taking on unconstitutional powers, and you had Lincoln trampling all over the Constitution, and he's considered our greatest president, but the left, the right adores him, the Republicans adore him, and they don't seem to realize how, you know, this is your first big government president. He set tons of precedents, and as I said, if today anyone, if he had an ACLU that still did its job, like when I was a card-carrying member as a teenager, if they cared about civil liberties, they would have been, you know, filing lawsuits and going nuts over what's happening with the January 6th prisoners, you know, denied all due process for going on 4 years now. And they've been silent. But if they did, under Lincoln, the government would simply cite the precedent of what Lincoln did during the Civil War. He locked up untold thousands of Northern prisoners after he suspended the writ of habeas corpus. So they would just say, no, Lincoln, and they cite Lincoln's precedent all the time. George W. Bush, his administration cited Lincoln as the precedent for the treatment of the prisoners at Guantanamo Bay. and Abu Ghraib. So this is, you know, people need to take their blinders off in terms of people like Lincoln. Of course, in this book, we go over FDR lot.
And rightly so. I haven't got to that chapter yet. But, you know, I even remember how Lincoln essentially was not very popular in his day. In fact, he was horribly unpopular, even in the North to a certain extent afterwards. And it wasn't until the early 20th century that Lincoln's history was, he was rehabilitated. And I think it was because it was the creation, it was the progressive era of creating the huge administrative state, which Lincoln was very, very proud of, very happy to do.
Right. And he was martyred, you know, as the first assassinated president, and, you know, there's obviously still a mystery around in my books, Crimes and Cover-Ups. I go into that. I think that was an inside job. I think, because, you know, it was engineered by Secretary of War Stanton and his administration. But be that as may, he, you know, if you look at the things Lincoln led to, it led to the excesses of Woodrow Wilson, and I've gone into that a lot, you know, locking up World War One prisoners, thing, and first eugenicist in public office. We talk a lot about Wilson and his foreign policy adventurism in this. I had no idea. You know, my researchers, Chris Graves and Peter Seacosh, did a great job of finding these things of how many times he invaded all these countries and the terrible things they did there. This is in the teens, the 20s. People were just amazed by that. And then, of course, FDR, we found, you know, perfect constant examples of him inventing cancel culture. It was a cancel culture. And it was a kind of cancel culture that cost Professor Harry Elmer Barnes his position, as I said. It happened to a lot of people, especially with the America First movement. FDR was calling up radio stations and newspapers and magazines, liberal periodicals, because these were mostly people on the left that objected to what he was doing, and got him canceled. So he set up cancel culture, and we have a great section of the book on what he did to American citizens. It wasn't just Japanese. He put German-Americans and Italian-Americans in concentration camps as well, and confiscated billions of dollars of businesses and homes from these people, and they never got it back.
I didn't know that. I did not know that about Germans. I did not know about that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Wow. Then we'll talk about it. they only emphasized the Japanese.
Yeah. And by the way, it was horrible, too. Horrible, too. You know, we weren't talking about spies. We were talking about American citizens, right? And when it comes to, hey, never again, you would hope that we would be smarter about that. Hey, Donald, hold on. I want to have another segment here with you, because I want to shift over to the 9/11 section of the book, because everyone who's listening right now lived that history, and we've been living the results of that history for about 24 years ever since, or 23 years ever since. We'll be right back with Donald Jeffries, and he takes these deep dives down historical rabbit holes with American Memory Hole, How the Court Historians Promote Disinformation, next on The Bill Maher Show.
If you have an appliance that's giving you trouble,
part of the appropriate U2 song bumper, even though Bono came out the other day and said if former President Trump is elected President Trump in November, he's going to drive his truck off a cliff. I don't know. It's interesting times that we live in, because, and maybe Donald remembers this too. Donald Jeffries is my guest. He's has this brand new book out. It's called American Memory Hole, How the Court Historians Promote Disinformation. There's a lot of drama and tension surrounding the upcoming election here, Donald. And I think one of the reasons, though, is that both candidates, of course, are flawed in different ways, because we're all human. We get this. But yet I think we hunger for an America that's no longer there. And I remember a better America, in spite of our flaws, when I was growing up and even as a young man, than what I'm able to witness now. So I know my kids don't experience the same sense of freedom, and even being left alone to do what I wish, even as a young man. And would you agree with that? Do you talk about that on your Substack much? What is your Substack, by the way?
Oh, yeah. Well, my Substack is called I Protest. The same, I'm always protesting something. I have a podcast that you can find it in place. It's called I Protest as well. It airs Fridays. Mm-hmm. 5 p.m. Eastern, but the Substack is DonaldJeffries.substack.com. I protest, and that's the only place I'm not being shadow banned. Yeah, I talk on there a lot about what I call it America 2.0 that we're living in now, and America 1.0 is the America we knew. And I pretty much, it's a completely different world. And whenever I go out and about with my kids or whatever, and I'm in a mall or something, and, you know, the same malls that I went to, you know, and it's like being in a different world. I don't know how to describe it. the look, you know, the, with the you know, obviously the demographics have switched. So there's fewer and fewer white people, and there's so many obese, and it's just a completely different look than what we knew. And obviously, when you combine that with the lack of civil liberties you mentioned, we had so much more personal liberty. I try to tell people, you know, the kind of freedoms I had in the 70s and 80s, you know, that you can't even imagine.
Our kids would look at us like we have two heads when I would talk about. And now even something as simple as, all right, not that I'm advocating this, all right, driving 100 miles an hour on the backcountry roads as a kid routinely. And rarely, if ever, worrying about getting caught.
Sure, bouncing up and down in a pickup truck, you know, and I didn't have seatbelts on.
Exactly. But a surveillance state which grew up like creeping vines, especially since 9/11. Now, as rough as it was post JFK assassination, which of course you've covered in other books, and you also talk about that in this one, American Memory Hole. The big shift really was 9/11, and of course, I just believed the government story for, I have to say, the first year or two, and then something just didn't feel right. And I started looking at more alternative history, more alternative reporting, and a lot of stuff that had just been suppressed, was not brought up by the 9/11 Commission. I mean, everything. And you have an amazing chapter on 9/11. We all went through that, and it wasn't that long ago in the grand scheme of things. But it changed everything about America into America 2.0, in my view. So where do you even start on something like that?
Well, and that's exactly what when people ask me, you know, when did we change from America 1.0 and America 2.0? I think the most obvious part is on September 11, 2001, or in the immediate aftermath, because what happened? I mean, we allowed this ridiculous, absurd story that was easily just dismantled, but it, much like the JFK assassination or any of the other things I write about. But this had so many absurd elements, people, hijacked. I mean, in this book, in American Memory Hole, I have the report that I discovered these things when I'm researching them with my research team, but I didn't know that Muhammad Atta's father claimed to have talked to him after 9/11. And that he was in hiding and blaming the Mossad for framing him. And it's like, and he had to go to Germany to be interviewed with that. It's like, how was he talking to his son? How did he not die if he was flying one of the planes? Those are the kind of questions and the kind of information that's out there. You can find these in mainstream sources. You know, he had to go to Germany because he wanted to be interviewed here. But what happened after, because of the lies, and this is just a gigantic lie, after 9/11, we saw the Patriot Act was created, which just destroyed so many of what was left of our civil liberties.
And by the way, Donald, the Patriot Act was like instantly created. It's like they already had it pre-written and just standing by, and nobody had to read it. Congress didn't certainly read it at that point.
No. And there's only, I remember when I went to a Tulsi Gabbard rally, I don't know, 5-6 years ago, and got to meet her, handed her a copy of my book, Survival of the Richest. I don't know, I had a picture taken with her. But she said that she would abolish the Patriot Act if she was elected president. She's the only presidential candidate I know, but probably RFK Jr. might have said it. I don't know. But it needs to be gone, obviously. And the Homeland Security Department, the Republicans are now firmly entrenched to that. They're supposedly the party of a smaller government. But again, going back to Lincoln, you know, this is Homeland Security Department would have warmed the cockles of Lincoln's heart, because what happened is that.
So you have the Republicans there, but then what about the Democrats, supposedly the party of civil liberties and protecting people's rights?
Right.
What happened there then, all through this?
Exactly. Today's left is so different than, you know, and again, the fact that they accepted 9/11, I mean, even on its surface, you had people like Ron Paul and maybe Bernie Sanders, even early on, where they were saying, okay, well, they were accepting the story, but saying, well, you know, this is obviously because of our foreign policy.
Well, you know, those people, though, were pilloried on National Review. Remember the, what was it?
Yeah.
I think they were called unpatriotic conservatives. And it was Ron Paul. I remember Pat Buchanan being on
the
front page of that, and various others. And those that were not down with the agenda post 9/11.
Yeah, and that's what it was, and that it conveniently created by converting this talk of homeland. And George W. Bush, you know, almost a direct quote from Abraham Lincoln, you know, saying, if you're not with us, you're with the terrorists. I mean, that's pretty much what Lincoln was saying. If you're not with the Union, you're with the, you know, if you're not supporting everything we're doing, you're a secessionist. You're a secesh. you know, you're one of the Confederates. And that's exactly that mindset. You know, we talked about it. I mean, Wilson had that that mentality. So did FDR. And it's always been that way in all our, you know, no-win wars and ridiculous wars. And with 9/11, though, it became, because this was because of it and because it was never investigated. I mean, I talked to people. I talked in Hidden History. I interviewed a guy that was worked in the World Trade Center, and he had fled to England, you know, out of fear. And people can read all about that there. The fear is very real. And trying to the American Memorial, trying to contact these people. I wasn't very successful. And these were people that had been outspoken in the early days. Afterwards, they've just disappeared. And I don't know if they just decided they didn't want to talk anymore, but I couldn't get a hold of them. But you know, we tabulated in this book, there were over 150 firefighters alone.
Yeah, and that's what I wanted to get to. 155 something firefighters. These people who were actually on the ground are trained. They know which end is up. They understand what's going on, and they all describe pretty much the same thing. And what was that? Which is completely. It almost memory hold in the 9/11 report, and certainly memory hold in a lot of the mainstream reporting that happened out of that all. What happened?
Yeah, I mean, these are all, I mean, if there was an honest investigation, obviously what they would have done is they would have said, well, there had to be some kind of explosions. And I quote from the, you know, in all these instances, the JFK assassination, Oklahoma City, and certainly 9/11, the early on, the narrative hasn't been set yet. So early reporting is really important. So I quote from there were several mainstream reports early on about that there was a truck or some kind of vehicle parked at the base of either one of or both of the Twin Towers that had explosives in it. Now, you know, how do you make a mistake like that? And that's the kind of thing. You have people like Willie Rodriguez, who was again, ignored by the 9/11 Commission and demonized by people who talked. He rescued a lot of people, but he talked about explosions in the sub-basement. You know, this is, you're talking about 80-some floors below where it happened, and so there's so many questions about it.
And witness after witness after witness talking about the synchronized flashes of explosions when they were inside the building.
Yeah.
And they were ignored. Ignored.
Exactly.
So it's like, are you going to believe what NHTSA says, or NHTSA? I forget federally.
Yes.
NHTSA. Are you going to believe them, or are you going to believe your own eyes and your experience when you were actually inside the building getting ready to come down? You know, that kind of thing,
of
right?
Course. Well, and this is, you know, there's so many parallels to the JFK assassination where there you had, you know, like 57 witnesses said the motorcade stopped or almost stopped, and they're just ignored. The vast majority of the witnesses, my hero Mark Lane, you know, early on in people. Vast majority of the witnesses said shots came from the front. And so they ignore eyewitness testimony. Here, you're over 155 firefighters, and, you know, the firefighters were glorified and, you know, martyred, and rightly so. Some of them lost their lives.
Well, they were all heroes until they started talking about, and it went boom, 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 you know,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
As soon as the firefighters started talking like that, then shut up, right? Was that pretty much
what? Exactly, and that's so, you know, if they're heroes, and you're I mean, I remember Dennis Leary, that ridiculous comedian, when somebody asked him about it, he said, my brother was a firefighter. It's like, and that, so that somehow dismisses, you know, questions about 9/11. That's the establishment view in a nutshell. They've kind of, so it's like you can't question, even, so I can't quote from their testimony, 150-some people, firefighters that heard these explosions, describe them, you know, including in Building 7. And one of those guys died, Barry Jennings, very strangely. I have his story in Hidden History. A lot, you know, people can find a lot more in that. But this one, we go much deeper and into more depth in these subjects, including 9/11. And so you find out about Building 6 in here. You know, people talk about Building 7, which, of course, is important.
Okay, now, Building 7 certainly was. I never heard about Building 6. I might not have gotten to that part yet. Which one was Building 6? Just curious.
Well, Building 6 was where they kept the gold. And the gold supplies, and this guy... Sonnenfeld, I think his name. There's so many names I get him mixed up, but he was a whistleblower, and he talked about how, hey, you know, the gold was, you know, it's gone. It was raided apparently before the blast or something, and they, you know, again, this is what makes people go down the bottom of the rabbit holes and get paranoid. His wife wound up being murdered shortly thereafter, and they tried to frame him for her murder. Now, he fled to, I think, Argentina, where he still is. I was unable to contact him, but I have lots of great quotes from him there, and he talks about, yeah, people, and it's not only building 7, but building 6, and I you know, I don't know what was going on there. A lot of this stuff people say, well, what does it mean? What do you think? I don't theorize.
You're not even talking about really the who did it, right? You're not talking about that, right?
No, I don't know. All I know is that they're lying to you, so of course, yeah, I can sit there and say, yeah, I don't think it's possible for 18 crazed or 19 crazed Arabs, you know, armed with box cutters and plastic knives to do that.
And I don't think it's credible that all of a sudden practically every, security camera over at the Pentagon just magically was off.
Exactly. Even back then we had, and in this book I go into more detail about how they try to explain what happened. They were under construction. It's ridiculous that there was not, so we still don't know. So, of course, you have theories it was a missile. It couldn't have been a plane. Well, instead of, you know, making fun of those people, you know, ask why all these security cameras weren't working. This is the heart of the defense establishment, and of course, that's the we had almost an hour and a half from the first hijacked plane to the plane that hit the Pentagon, or whatever hit the Pentagon. And if any action was taken at all by the government, by this, you know, vaunted greatest defense system the world has ever built, when, you know, you had a plane heading right for it, mm-hmm. for the Pentagon itself. They did nothing except probably shoot down Flight 93 in Pennsylvania. We're not sure what happened there, but in this book, I go into deeper into Flight 93 than anybody ever has before. And, you know, we just analyzed the testimony there. And if people can figure out what happened, they're better than me. But, you know, all the early witnesses that came there, including the mayor, police, and everything, saying,
But you see, that's why it's important that the early reporting ends up being saved. Because so much of that gets erased and flushed down the memory hole when the narrative starts making its case. Well, as an example, I think you wrote in this book, American Memory Hole, that all of the BBC reporting from that day, all the early reporting, it's all gone. They just accidentally, it just disappeared.
Yeah, much like the original moon landing tapes or these really important events, they just kind of disappear in the... So those of us, again, who have investigated these things know from the JFK assassination, the RFK assassination, and the ceiling panels that, you know, where bullet holes went, you know, they got destroyed or disappeared. And people run into that all the time, and it's like, you know, come on, you save a lot of junk, and you're telling me that government people don't realize that this kind of material might be important to an investigation. But if what happens in 9/11 and happened to Oklahoma City, even something like Sandy Hook where they destroyed the school, all these crime scenes, Waco, all of them, they're carted away. The debris is carted away before any independent people can. And so in terms of 9/11, they didn't get a chance to any independent analyst to come in and test for any kinds of explosives.
And anybody that tried to take 9/11 or, let's say, World Trade Center debris and test it, they were arrested. They were in big trouble. In fact, everything had to go to the what's that landfill? It all had to go to the landfill. Forget that.
Yeah. It's usually, I don't know if that's one of the secret. There's so many, like we talked in Flight 93 about how I think they finally supposedly took the debris to some secretive place. But again, we don't know what debris. And people, read that section of Flight 93. If you can figure out what happened, I don't know.
And what I appreciate about Memory Hole, how the court historians promote disinformation, you're not trying to come up with the motives and all that other sort of stuff. That's for other people to do. It's just the main thing is that, yeah, you're being lied to, and you've been lied to continually about a lot of this, all right? And like I said, I remember a little bit of the firefighters coming out saying, and yet it was like there was a controlled demolition. It was going boom, 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 boom. And you had people within the building saying boom, 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 and talking about the flashes going boom, 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 boom. But now all we know is that if you want to drop a couple of steel frame buildings, you just get a bunch of jet fuel and you burn it for 45 minutes, right? And then it comes down. We don't have to bother with the explosives anymore. It's an amazing time here, Donald, all right? Before I take off here, and I appreciate you having taken a few minutes, we'll have to have you back, all right? But do you think, though, that the prevalence of the internet and everybody walking around with cell phone cameras and the ability to move stuff around, is it going to be difficult to memory hole stuff in the future? What do you think?
It should be, and it should be, and I think that's why they move so quickly from one event to the next. whether it's a school shooting, the Trump assassination attempts, any of that. You know, these things have such a short life expectancy span now. And I think it is because of that. Now, YouTube has done what it can. You know, YouTube used to be great for any of these things. You get some kid from his parents' basement and put together a great, you know, thoroughly researched video that was way more impressive than anything you saw on television. But they got rid of that. So it's harder. You can still go on Rumble and places like that and find some kind of investigative reporting. But, yeah, because of that, because we're citizen journalists, we saw that during COVID, a lot of this stuff that was filmed by investigative citizen journalists.
Yeah, but even then, it was a struggle. It was a struggle for them to get traction, get it out.
Yeah, and now without YouTube, it is harder. I mean, I have a YouTube channel, but they just suspended me again. I don't even know why they do. I mean, they just.
Well, wow, you are suspended for violating community standards or our standards, or you think you're trying to get excessive likes from someone that's not you, and oh, it looks like a bot. I mean, it's the same, same kind of BS. Okay, what is next for you after this, after Memory Hole? Where do you think it goes?
Well, I'm working on a book. It's basically the fourth volume of Hidden History, but it's going to include the Trump phenomenon. I've got so much on him himself, and of course we don't know what's going to happen in the election. So if he gets elected again, then I guess it'll take a while for the book to come out. But that's a story in itself, and so there's so much there in terms of the treatment he received, what happened during his administration, the lawfare prosecutions, which is really just the most insidious form of judicial review, and it's set an awful precedence for all of us, and what the assassination attempts and things like that. So I think that's where I'm going, but I don't know where it's going because I don't know. This is an open-ended story. We don't know what's happening. Is the Trump story going to be over after November 5th? I don't know. Or are we going to have four more years? I mean, it's hard to tell. So that's going to – I can't imagine I can incorporate Trump into a book about hidden history. I think that he's probably going to have to be his own book. So that's probably where I'm going next, something on Trump and maybe, over into, when he was out of office for 4 years and the Biden, all the excesses of the Biden administration and so forth, and all the infringements on civil liberties, especially the lawfare, because they set so many horrible precedents during that, with Trump and Alex Jones, too. And people, because both of those people are despised by millions, so loved by millions, too. But because of that, a lot of people cheered. And I said, it doesn't matter what you think. As a civil libertarian, you can't do this.
Yeah.
You can't bring emotion into the legal system, and that's all that's in there now.
Yeah, I was not a huge fan of Alex Jones, all right? I mean, I thought, he does what he does. Good for him. God bless him. That sort of stuff. But when he started going on the Sandy Hook thing, I remember saying and thinking, I told friends about this, they're going to get him on this one. This is how he's going to hang himself. And I didn't like being right, but I kind of knew where they were going to take that. That, what was it, more than $1 billion for defaming, defaming people who were never even named on his show,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. And I said, it doesn't matter what you think of Sandy Hook or anything else. We have the right, first of all, we have the right to be wrong.
Damn straight.
We have the right to be racist. We have the right to be anti-Semitic. We have the right to be transphobic or whatever you want to call it. That's part of human nature. You have a right, if you want to be a bigot, you have a right to do that. But people don't get, the left especially doesn't believe that now. They don't think, they want to police your speech, and this is the, and I said, people, you're applauding Alex Jones, you're saying it's just Sandy Hook and all that. Well, what about the 9/11? All the families that were affected by 9/11, and all the way more attention was paid to that than Sandy Hook. So are they going to come after people like my friend Richard Gage and people like that are architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth? That he founded, are they going to come after them? Because if you're going to say that questioning Sandy Hook is harassment of the parents,
yep.
There were children involved in isn't questioning what happened 9/11, isn't that harassment? I mean, it opens the door, and it's a slippery slope, and I don't like it. But again, people can't see through the person. Same thing with Trump. If you can convict somebody of raping a woman that couldn't remember the year.
Couldn't remember the year or the details of it, yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. That opens, any of us could be, this woman 30 years ago, she's, or I don't know exactly what year, but.
Yeah, present the man or woman and we will present the crime, right? That's all you
exactly.
need.
Exactly. So that's what I say. It doesn't matter what you think about Alex Jones or Trump or any of these personalities or what the issue is. It doesn't matter what you think about any of these things. it's a terrible precedent. Free speech is free speech. There should be no asterisks on it. Again, that's me being a civil libertarian.
And we appreciate that. Donald Jeffries, author of Memory Hole, How the Court Historians Promote Disinformation. I consider this a must read. Very, very good and informative book. And like I said, I just bought it a couple of days ago on a listener's recommendation. I said, I got to get you on and we'll have you back. All right. Thank you very much, Donald.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me, Bill.
Right, take care. 8:48. We ran long, but it was worth running long on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. This is the Bill Myers Show.
Josephine County needs strong.
The Bill Myers Show is on. News Talk 106.3 KMED.
8:53. Hope you enjoyed that talk, Donald Jeffries. I certainly did. Maybe it was just self-indulgent of me, but I just think it's a great book worth reading. American Memory Hole. Doing our best to not have the holes filled with memories. Okay. All right. 770-5633. Don't have a lot of time for some open phones, but I do want to get some emails of the day in here, too. Emails of the day brought to you by Dr. Stephen Nelson, Central Point Family Dentistry, centralpointfamilydentistry.com. It's on Freeman Way in Central Point, right next door to the Mazatlan Mexican restaurant. Great people. And by the way, if you don't have dental insurance, they have a dental plan there, which works a lot like dental insurance, lower cost and better benefits than most of the insurance. So check it out there, centralpointfamilydentistry.com. Obscure Pool from Wolf Creek writes me this morning. And he, along with Jan Dunlap, both wrote me about a word that I mispronounced the other day, and I wanted to correct the word. And it had to do, I called it chitin, which is the shell of an insect, you know, the material in that. And then Poole, and Jan both wrote me, and Poole said, hey, Bill, this word is not used much in common parlance. It is basically pronounced chitin. I know this due to a background in entomology. My research mostly seemed to indicate that chitin and mammals are not really compatible because our immune system doesn't recognize it. Hence, an inflammatory immune response would be the result. That's the nutshell version. Yeah. And that was one of the reasons why I was talking. I forget who I was talking to about this, in which they're trying to get us to eat insects. And yet the problem with they being the, you know, the stack and pack housing globalists that are, you know, you will own nothing and be happy types. You know, if they manage to continue to get the control there, you will eat the bugs. Well, bugs with chitin on it tends to induce an inflammatory response in many humans. And we're trying to avoid the inflammation. Just saying. All right. I appreciate that, Poole. Patrick says, Bill, a broad title to be sure, compensation for harmed Americans. But this is what I'm getting at. Words have meaning and consequences. That's a given. Politicians use words more than almost anyone else. Careless words spoken by political candidates have the potential to cause great harm to happen to people, whether it's deserved or not. Now, the proposed solution, just like medical doctors must have malpractice insurance to pay damages to patients that have been harmed by doctors' actions or negligence, I propose that all politicians must carry malpractice insurance to pay damages to citizens who have been harmed by politicians' careless rhetoric. Damages could be defined as an incitement to physical harm, damage to reputation, and many other situations. Like I said, words have consequences. It is time that politicians feel those consequences. All right. I don't know. Free speech is free speech. Can't avoid the consequences of it, I suppose. Would anybody tell the truth if it hurts, if it could potentially hurt someone? Because harm these days, Patrick, means my feels were hurt. My feels were hurt. I don't know if in today's situation that's a good idea or not. But I appreciate your writing. Email Bill at BillMyersShow.com. One more email before we wrap for Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Dale from Medford writes, Bill, I want to point out to those Christians who don't vote and expect God to take care of them. First, I am sure he will, but I must point out that Peter could not have walked on the water with Jesus until he first stepped out of the boat and after Jesus invited him to do so. The Creator has given us a wonderful opportunity to exercise our opinions and selections by voting under this great country's Constitution. He has invited each of us to vote. We need to step out and to do so in order to experience the great wonder that is still to come. The Christian non-voters need to step out of their little boat. Thank you very much, Dale.